so well, so pardon me, my laughter, as I sure do understand. Even Moses got excited when he saw the promised land. That's right, you're not Texas. That's right, you're not Texas. That's right, you're not Texas. Texas wants you anyway. That's right, you're not Texas. That's right, you're not Texas.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Lookout Landing podcast. This is episode 12. I am Kate Prusser, managing editor for Lookout Landing. Joining me today, as always, is John Troopin. John, how are you?
I'm doing not too bad, Kate. The thunderstorm that was directly above my house about 5 minutes ago has passed by, and I still have power, which makes me optimistic for the rest of this recording.
Did you happen to see which way it's going? Is it headed south? Because I might be running into that same issue. It's gone all black and stormy and, like, you know, later Harry Potter movie here.
Yeah, I am looking out over the city, and it is a little bit rough looking to the south, so best of luck to you.
Cool, thanks.
I'm sure you'll be fine. You're hardy.
Well, and joining us as well, we have to curtail this talk because we're tempting him. We're rubbing it in his face. Longtime Seattle lover of things in Seattle, not a lover based in Seattle. I'm terribly sorry. That's the implication. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know your life, Levi. Anyway, joining us today.
I'm just going to let you ride this one out and see where it goes.
Joining us today is Levi Weaver, who is the Rangers beat writer and storyteller for WFAA. Hi, Levi.
How's it going?
Well, you know, we've spent some time maybe illustrating the less glorious parts of Seattle to you, so.
Oh, all the rain. Nobody knows about that anywhere but in Seattle. We all just thought it was perfect weather up there all the time. So you're the secret's now, out.
You don't understand. It was the rainiest winter that we've ever had. It's extra rainy now.
It was really, really brutal.
It's almost like the climate is changing or something.
Hard to say.
I don't know. I've been floating that idea around here lately as like, hey, guys, I've been thinking about this thing, but nobody really seems to think that it's a big deal down here. So,
well, you are in Texas.
That was the joke. That was where I was coming with it.
Handing out leaflets at Globe Life Park.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I am a little curious about your background. Maybe we could just kind of go over that briefly for the listeners.
Okay, sure.
Because you did spend some time in Seattle, and I know that you miss our fair city. So what long and twisty and possibly hellscaped road led you to Texas?
Gosh, let's see if I can get through this in less than 2 minutes. On your mark, get set, go. My dad was a professional rodeo cowboy, so I grew up... I grew up going from rodeo to rodeo, and not only was he a... rodeo cowboy, he was also an ordained home missionary to the rodeo cowboys, so he was a cowboy preacher. That was our life as children. After I grew up, I went to college for a couple of years, and then I quit. Oh, we have a UPS package on our front porch. Sorry.
Not a problem.
You can bring that in, Lincoln. That's fine. I get those 10 seconds back on the storytelling. So... I quit college. I was going to be a baseball play-by-play announcer. That was my original plan. And people used to look at me a lot weirder when I said that when I was a musician. I quit college after 2 years because I hated it. I traveled the world for a couple years. Then I was a youth pastor at my dad's cowboy church for 2 years. Then I broke up with my band and my girlfriend at the same time, and I moved to England for 2 years. Moved back to the States when I landed an opening slot on Imogen Heap's U.S. tour. So I did that in 2006, and then I just kind of languished, really. I released a few albums, did a lot of tours. I've done probably, I don't know, 700 or 800 shows, did a lot of house shows. The Seattle Living Room shows, by the way, Kristen and Carrie Watt. I don't know if you've been to these, but you should go. They're amazing. So yeah, I did that. In 2014, I moved my whole family into an RV, and we toured around together because we had two kids, and I was tired of being away all the time. So we hit 46 states, I think, that year, most of them twice. And then I finished my career with about 6 weeks in Europe and the Middle East. Almost died in Istanbul. That's another story for another time. And moved back, and then I just mysteriously stopped playing my guitar, and I didn't have anything else really to say, so I planted a garden. And we were going to move to Seattle when we were done in the RV, but my wife got offered a job at a startup, and it was in Dallas. And both of our families are from Texas, and so I thought, well, no, actually, we're not doing that. And then I found out that she was going to get some equity in the company, and we really didn't have anything lined up in Seattle, so we moved to Texas. And over about a year after I last touched my guitar, I got offered a job to write about the Rangers, and here we are.
So suffice it to say, you're maybe not the most traditional of the guys in the press box.
No, and I'm sorry. I feel like I rambled a little bit on that because we had packages arriving at the house. So
you're in the right place.
Yeah, I think any story that involves multiple iterations of the phrase rodeo preacher, rodeo pastor, yeah. is rodeo church. Any combination of those things really is I'll stick around for that story as long as you want me to.
It was a good upbringing, but it was interesting to then, you know, start to live in cities instead of in rural America. And I feel like we could do an entire podcast about that perspective and how it applies to today's wasteland of political opinions and ideas. But let's talk about baseball.
But let's talk about baseball. Absolutely. Because focusing on the rest of the world right now is sort of terrifying.
Yeah, super depressing.
How do you think that having traveled the world and having a background that's maybe not as super hyper narrowly baseball focused as maybe like a lot of the jobs seem to be going right now, you know, where you study math and baseball numbers and that's pretty much it. How does that influence the way that you write about or approach baseball?
I think it's, as is the case with a lot of things in life, your biggest strength is also your biggest weakness. So I don't know as much about maybe advanced statistics as a lot of the writers, and I don't know as much about things like MLA style and and that as the rest of the writers. And so a lot of my writing is informed from song lyrics or, you know, poetry or philosophy books that I read. And really, I think baseball is pretty unique as a sport that it lends itself to that. I mean, you guys are no stranger to that. Jeff Sullivan started Lookout Landing, right? So actually, that's a real question. He started it, right?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes.
Like guys like him and Grant Brisby and guys that write about baseball, not in the traditionally stoic, stodgy baseball way, I think make baseball a more engaging game. And there are times that I'll put my foot in my mouth for sure. And somebody will point out like, that's not right or real. You made that up completely. I didn't mean to. It was an accident. I just thought that Jake Diekman was made from dragon scales. I thought it was real, so.
Well, I think that's, and certainly that's a tradition that we have at LL, I think largely because the team has been so bad for so many of the years. So it's like, it's much more appealing to me to write about the idea that Nelson Cruz playing in the outfield is actually like run by a crew of tiny men who inhabit his body and like fix up the rigging and,
really,
you know,
want to talk
sail
about
him
Nelson
like
Cruz
a ship
in the outfield, if you don't mind.
Oh, I mean,
off to a glowing start.
Sports PTSD about this.
Oh, right.
Goodness.
I mean, he's been all right for us.
Yeah.
But what am I saying?
So happy for you.
But I do kind of wonder about things. One of my favorite Levi pieces is probably the Adam Jones catch, the famous catch in the WBC, and breaking that down to be a picture of the Last Supper. And I am, how did your bosses in Texas let you get away with that?
My
I'm
boss
so
is
curious.
Really cool, actually. He's great. Or Moyal is his name. And he... I mean, anybody that's going to hire somebody with my background to be their beat writer. Like, we're the ABC affiliate in a top five market, and he trusted our station's reputation by sending me into the locker room. So anybody that's that brave, well, I'm not sure what he sees, but he's super cool about it. We did catch some flack when I took the picture. I took the picture of Adam Jones and superimposed it on a painting of the Last Supper, and then I put some of the heads from the crowd on some of the various disciples. And
it was fantastic.
Yeah, Twitter loved it. Facebook for our station, I made it the banner image, and that's really where I messed up because they hated it, and I got called all number of names.
Oh, what a surprise. Twitter was really cool about something, and Facebook was totally regressive.
Yeah.
who could have predicted such a thing?
Yeah.
Have you gotten any sort of pushback or sort of odd responses when you've gone into the locker room just from being, I guess, having a different background or having sort of a different way of looking at maybe even asking different questions than some of the players are used to?
Yeah, no, not really. I think one thing about most baseball players, especially now, and maybe this hasn't always been the case, but I think most players, and especially younger players, they have interests that are not baseball-centric. Like, I feel like maybe in the late 70s or early 80s, if you run into a locker room and you start asking questions about, like, so what's a band you've been listening to lately, somebody might yell at you, like, this is not about baseball, leave. It doesn't seem like that's really the case now. And I think maybe sometimes the regional sports networks, you'll see them do things where they are getting you guys are Mariners fans. The Mariners commercials are great. So they'll have TV commercials where they're having the Rangers do, or the Mariners or whatever team it is, do these crazy things and that are not really related to baseball at all. And I think the players kind of appreciate it, maybe, because you do hear the same questions every day. So how's your rehab going? Are you going to throw a bullpen tomorrow? Wow, you gave up 3 runs in the 9th inning. Mm. What were you seeing out there? What did you see on that pitch that you hit for a home run? I don't know, like a freaking baseball. I saw a baseball and I hit it. Like, and so I think maybe that's my ignorance plays to my strengths there, because if it is like serious baseball question asking time, like I'll have 2 or 3 questions lined up that are pertinent questions, but because I'm still low on the totem pole, like your T.R. Sullivans and Evan Grants are going to get those questions out of the way. So by the time it gets to me, I'm like, no, I'm good. Like, I got my answers I wanted to get. So the only questions I have to ask are if I'm working on, like, a special piece. And I think the players maybe appreciate being asked. Like, Joey Gallo hit a home run that had a 6-second hang time. So I thought, well, what else can Rangers do in 6 seconds? So I was like, Ryan Rua, how many Toy Story characters can you name in 6 seconds?
Jeffress,
how many candy bars can you name in 6 seconds? And, like, it breaks up the monotony, I think.
I think it's also helpful to, like, teach them, like, to let them know that you see them as whole people, right? They're not just, like, laundry that plays baseball. They're people with interests and humans. It treats them like humans, right?
And there are some players that don't want to engage in that sort of thing. Like, I've been trying to get a music recommendation from Cole Hamels for a year and a half now, and he's just like, nah, man, I don't really have anything. Like, he's polite about it, but he's just, like, declines to engage. So, you know, it's not everybody's bag, and that's fine.
I remember, I think you did the Rangers preview for the Effectively Wild podcast, if I recall correctly.
Yes,
and I remember you talking about the bullpen for the Rangers, just generally, in fact, not wanting to hear any baseball questions.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, well, I guess this is a two-parter. One, when you guys had Tom Wilhelmsen, did you get to ask him sort of any general questions? And two, has that still been able to continue with sort of the struggles that they've, you know, obviously it sounds like it's a really sort of fun unit, but, when you have struggles, which is something that we've seen with the Mariners, who have been a really fun team and had a really great environment last year, but have struggled this year to produce. And it would seem like maybe if you're struggling on the field, that might make it a little bit harder to be lighthearted. Have they still been able to sort of have that open-minded, fun atmosphere.
Yeah. So Wilhelmsen was great. He was the first guy that was cool to me last year. like I walked in and I think maybe this is the story that I told on the Effectively Wild podcast where like they were all sitting there and they kind of were going to talk to me for the first time. And I just started asking baseball questions and they weren't particularly smart. And it felt like the guys just wanted to like goof around a little bit. So I came in the next day like, hey guys, I feel like you let me in the circle of trust and I screwed it up by asking dumb baseball questions. So I'm just not going to do that ever again unless I have to. And that was, I asked Tom Wilhelmsen, like, man, he used to be a bartender at a place that had a lot of live music. Like, what are you listening to these days? And he was the first guy to just be like, oh, man, yeah, here, let me talk to you. And it turns out we knew a band in Arizona in common. It was, they were Nowhere Man and a Whiskey Girl was the name of the band. And the girl passed away of cancer, and then the husband took his own life like, immediately after. And it was just this heartbreaking thing because they were such sweet people.
Wow.
And Tom Wilhelmsen was like, wait, you know those guys? Or you knew those guys? Yeah, you knew those guys? And it was this first moment where like, oh, we connected outside of baseball. And it was like, we can just talk to people like they're people. And you know, as long as I'm not crossing any boundaries and getting in trouble with Rangers PR, then I'm going to get a better insight. Or, you know, when I do need to talk about baseball, like this week or the last week when it's been a rough stretch and the team's losing a lot, like, I feel like a team is going to be more likely to speak to somebody who they have a little bit of a rapport with than somebody who's just like badgering them every day with questions about like spin rate and bat path and like the sort of things that are really cool and really effective and the coaches need to know about. But the players are like, yeah, we talk about that with our coaches all the time. Can we talk about something else, please?
Sure.
So yeah, it's still fun, but you're right. Like when the team loses, it's not, people are a lot less likely to just sort of preemptively goof off.
We're definitely seeing that with the team this year, the Mariners, because, you know, last year they got off to such a fun start and we had the swell mitt and we had, you know, Leonis Martin was a big part of the team who I know is somebody who the Rangers fans also have history with. And then this year it's just been a very, very different environment because they've started so rough. So one thing that I think is kind of interesting to point out is like the parallels between the Mariners and the Rangers, right? As far as early season struggles have gone. What's going on with your team, Levi?
Man, I wish I knew the answer to that.
Talk about your team.
Right? Last year they were, well, I mean, this is the third year in a row where they've gotten off to a slow start. And the previous 2 years, they came back and won the division. The difference, obviously, this year is that the Astros, you're not going to come back and win the division by winning 86 games, probably. Like, the Astros are really good, as they showed, well, you know, all season so far. So, yeah, it's guys that you don't expect to be bad. Guys that were good last year are not performing well this year, and sure, like a lot of the runs that were scored off the bullpen were scored off of guys like Mike Hochschild, who's a Rule 5 pick. He's back with the Astros now. And Anthony Bass, who's kind of the go-between, like, we don't have anybody else to pitch, so I guess you're going to pitch now.
You just took the crane machine and craned him right out of Japan or wherever he was pitching?
Yeah, yeah. Plopped him right down into the ballpark and let him give up some home runs there. So, but yeah, I mean, guys like Tony Barnett, who last year was really, really, maybe like surprisingly effective last year, kind of come back to earth this year. Jake Diekman has been out with, you know, he had his colon removed because of ulcerative colitis. Keone Kella, who had some struggles last year, but man, just looked like a world beater near the end of the season. And even in the playoffs, he was one of the few bright spots in the playoffs. These guys have not been, Sam Dyson, who was perfectly acceptable closer last year, have not been super impressive this year. Jeremy Jeffress' velocity is down, but I don't know, maybe that's because he's pitched in 38 out of the first 25 games. Jose Leclerc has been a nice surprising addition, but he has been like mysteriously unavailable for a few days. So maybe,
yeah, where is he?
I was gonna say,
I don't know. Like day before yesterday, he was unavailable in a spot where you could really use somebody with strikeout stuff. Then yesterday he pitched. And then today, again, like, could have used a strikeout, and there's no Jose Leclerc. So I have no idea. And I don't travel with the team, so with them being in Houston the last 4 days, like, these are not questions that I can really ask. perhaps the most obvious thing here is that Adrian Beltre is out. And, you know, yes, some of that is going to affect the offense, but Joey Gallo has been great with Beltre out. I think, I don't know how much weight you give clubhouse or on-field presence, but if you give it any at all, you have to think that maybe the lack of Adrian Beltre is a real factor.
Is he not with the team?
Yeah, he went home for a few days, but I think he rejoined the team in Houston. I haven't watched the bench closely to see if he's in there in Houston, but I know he did go home for a few days just to be with his family. Like, look, I'm not going to play. I can do rehab. And no, you know what? He's in Arlington, actually. I say that. He's been in Arlington doing rehab with the Dallas Mavericks rehab staff because they deal with a lot more calf injuries in basketball than they do baseball. So, yeah, he's not been with the team.
I was just reading about that because I popped over to Lone Star Ball to just refresh my mind on what was going on. They had several articles about him working out with the Mavericks training staff, which seemed interesting. I didn't realize that the calf injury was not so common in baseball just because Felix, you know, we had that loomed so large for us last year. Yeah. So,
although his injury, I believe, came from jumping too excitedly off of the bench, which is a less exciting or less common style of injury, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, how did Beltre's calf get injured? I don't think I ever saw that.
I don't know, actually, because it's been both. He injured one calf and then sort of got that healthy enough to go to the World Baseball Classic, and then I guess it was his other calf now that has been worse since then, and he was almost back, and it was kind of a day-to-day thing, and then I think he re-aggravated it doing, like, base running drills or something, so.
One of our Twitter questions that I feel like we can sort of slot in here now, it comes from Chris K. At C from Bothell, but I think it's something that we have enjoyed for a long time, is do Rangers fans enjoy the Beltre-Felix matchups as much as Mariners fans?
100%, yes.
Good, good, good.
Yeah, is it covered as extensively as it's always covered here?
It seems like, yeah, it gets pretty good coverage here. The first year that he came, nobody told us, and so we thought they were really angry at each other.
Oh, no!
And then some of the beat writers were like, no, you know, this happened when he was with Boston too. Like, they're good friends. And we're like, it doesn't look like they're good friends. It looks like they're about to fight each other on the field. And then, you know, eventually we figured it out. But yeah, I think it's a huge bummer that both of those guys are on the disabled list, especially as the teams play each other. And then, you know, Cabrera has also been on the disabled list, and he's another one that kind of will jump in and have fun with those two. So,
it's just been a really unfun season.
Yeah, I agree.
With the injury. This is not a great start to a baseball season at all.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, the Astros are in first place.
That sucks. Right, for all of us.
The Angels are better than expected. That's bad.
That's awful. Yeah, let's dump on the Angels.
Good. Aaron Judge has been hitting a bunch of home runs, and Pineda has been fantastic. That's no fun.
No, there's nothing fun so far. And
even
watching
baseball fights. I love baseball fights, and the only baseball fight, real one that we've had, we had the benches cleared with the Rangers and the Astros in game one. Nobody really hit each other. But the only real, like, baseball fight it seems like we've had has been the Red Sox and the Orioles, and even that has just been, like, unfun and ugly. And, like,
no, it's not a fun, like,
and the umpires are involved and stupid.
That's an ugly side of baseball that fight is based on. That's not, like, perhaps you did not see we had a brawl in the game last night.
Beer brouhaha. Yeah.
In the Mariners game?
Oh, yes.
Oh, I totally missed
brouhaha
that.
Almost.
Yeah, it was a brouhaha almost.
Brouhaha.
It was Danny Valencia tagged out Martin Maldonado on a bunt.
Okay.
And
that was
what happened.
And Maldonado, he tagged him in the chest, and Maldonado suddenly was just
enraged,
furious. And for some reason, that like led to some jawing. Valencia was confused, and then like they clipped away and they clipped back, and both bullpens were sprinting in,
yes,
just in equal lines, and it was mind-blowing. I still don't know what happened.
The worst, dumbest bullpen fight.
That is fair though, because you know you're not supposed to tag people in baseball, so
that's very true.
I was like, oh, did he tag him like in the junk or in the face or something? But no, it was just
right in the chest.
It was a chest tag. Yeah,
maybe he called him a name when he did it. Like, I don't know.
Well, Valencia is kind of known for that. I know he. I think he had a grand slam off Greinke.
Uh-huh.
And was giving him some stuff about it when they played the Diamondbacks in spring training. And Greinke got a hit and was standing on first base. And Valencia decided that would be a good time to, like, you know, flip him some shit about how he hit a home run off of him. So I think Danny Valencia, I think,
idea.
Is that guy. Yeah.
He's your Rougned Odor.
He's a...
I wish. Good grief.
Let's have a good laugh about that.
Oh, I meant from that aspect only, but, you know.
Sure.
He's the instigator.
I wish he had tiny horses that were part of his contract. That would make me like him so much more.
Yes, the horses. We've had some good animal... That has been one fun thing we've had this season, is our animal-themed weirdness. The Rougned Odor got two horses with his contract extension, and Yu Darvish adopted a dog from Twitter. So, there's been that.
We did see that, and that was very, very cute. Yes.
I think one of the things that is, the Rangers have the most likable players that I am forced to hate, of any team. Like, I love Andrews and Beltre. Like, Odor is fun. Like, Yu Darvish is one of my favorite pitchers to watch. Like, are there players on the Mariners or any other team that just purely from a fan standpoint, like, you love watching but feel obligated to root against?
Oh, absolutely. Taylor Motter this year is that guy, right?
Absolutely.
Do you say this just as somebody who used to rock some nice flow himself?
Oh, look, that's a factor. That's probably why Tony Barnett and I got along when I first went into the clubhouse last year. No, he's just been good and fun. Robinson Cano is another one for the kind of the opposite reason. Like, Cano seems to me to be the master of looking like he's not trying very hard, and then you look up and you're like, whoa, wait, what did he just do without trying so hard? Did he just do an amazing thing that nobody else can do? He did. In fact, he did. Yeah, I think Seth Smith was fun last year, too. He's with the Orioles now, but he just seemed like a very fun and likable guy. And then James Paxton, who just like goes up there and throws an easy 98. That is tough to watch from the other side of the field, but goodness gracious, I imagine that's a lot of fun to watch as a Mariners fan.
It is fun. It doesn't look like he's having fun usually, but
yeah.
It is. it is
like
fun for us.
Bored angry up there.
Bored angry is a great way to describe James Paxton's resting face.
Yeah. Yes.
We've seen photos of him attempting a smile like a human does, and it's subpar at best.
It's so bad.
He's kind of like Colby Lewis last year, who would just, it looked like he was permanently scowling disapproval at everything that occurred on the baseball field. Like, that was an out, but it wasn't a perfect out. I'm not angry, I'm just disappointed.
He's got an incredibly good pursed lip.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of the Rangers and animals and everything, I think this is a good time to plug your side project.
Yes. My alt account.
Yes, your alt account. Go ahead and tell the people about your alt account.
It started, so as somebody who hadn't been a beat writer before, I used to notice when I was just following all the beat writers on Twitter that, you know, the news would come out, and I know now how it works, that John Blake, the director of PR, will go, we had a roster move, and everybody stands up and gets their phones ready, and okay, give us the roster move, John. Let's go. And then John will like tweet the roster move himself first, which I've come to call Blaking news. And then he will go, the Rangers have activated AJ Griffin. Anthony Bass has been optioned to AAA to make room for him on the roster. And then every beat writer, tap, 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 tap. And there's like six different identical tweets that go, and I read them all in John Blake's voice now.
The Rangers have activated AJ Griffin and optioned Anthony Bass. So I tried to keep up with that for a little while, and I just thought, well, this is stupid. We could just retweet John Blake, and then I don't know why I have to say the same thing that everybody else is. So one day, the Rangers were playing the White Sox, and Todd Frazier jumped into the stands to catch a foul ball, and he busted his lip. It was really ugly. And I was sitting down near the new guy, so I had to go sit by the guest media, and I hear the Sox PR guy go, all right, we got an announcement coming up on Frazier. And I thought, okay, great. Everybody's going to tweet the exact same thing. So I just said, in 60 seconds, we're going to get an announcement on Todd Frazier. I will be instead tweeting a picture of a buffalo. For no good reason. Like, why was it a buffalo? I don't know. It's the first thing that ran through my mind. And so, sure enough, Frazier had, a laceration. It was stitches. And so we get the White Sox people tweeting it, the Rangers people tweeting it, and just me with a picture of a buffalo that had sunglasses on and was smoking a cigarette. And Holly, I don't know if you guys follow Holly_Hall. She's a really good Rangers Twitter follower.
Yes, but yeah.
She says, please can we name him Sam Bison? And I thought, that's amazing. Yes. And somebody else suggested Charlie Huffalo, but he was too late. He was the second one. And so after that, I tweeted Sam Bison for a while. Anytime there was this announcement, anytime there were blinking news, Sam Bison. And then I thought, well, maybe I could do other Rangers and just create. So I created like Giraffiel Palmero. And there's one picture of Nolan Ryan Osiris and Gino Petraligator.
Mm-hmm. It's a touchstone.
Yeah, I had Joey Galligator for a while, and then Joey Gallop is my new one, where he's a horse.
I enjoy that one.
Nice. So, some are better than the others. Felino de Shields. And so it was always like Ranger-centric players. But then I got, I kind of got thinking that maybe I was overbearing my followers. So I started a new account. And plus just the Island of Dr. Morneau, and or the Island of Dr. Moreau, plus like, Morneau, I wanted to use the name, but he wasn't ever a Ranger, and so I thought, well, we have to expand this to become Major League wide, and so now I just mash up on Photoshop animals and players. It's the dumbest thing, guys. It's so dumb. I know it's dumb.
It's delightful.
And I imagine in a season that's kind of going sideways like this one, I find myself very envious of it and wishing that, because I don't know if your Twitter mentions are anything like the Lookout Landing account's Twitter mentions, but, the Mariners go out, they blow a game, and then it's death and destruction. And
oh, yeah. No, not anymore. I have no obligation to listen to anyone whose job is to make my life miserable. So I am a one strike and you're out guy on Twitter. If somebody just tweets something horrible or abusive or just like terrible at me, I just mute them immediately and I never deal with them again. I'm under no. I won't do it from the official like WFAA account, but I never check those mentions. So do whatever you want on that account.
That is the wise. Do whatever the wise man.
If your whole shtick is to make me miserable or to complain to me about the lineup, like why is Prince Fielder hitting fourth last year? I'm like. I could ask, and I will, or Jeff Bannister has his own Twitter account that he's ignoring you on, so why don't you just ask him directly?
Now I think we have the real reason that Scott Servais doesn't have a Twitter.
Would you, if you were the manager of a major league team, would you have a Twitter account? I wouldn't.
Oh, no way, shape, or form would I. No.
Would you have any way for people to contact you directly? No.
I'm always so grateful to the players who do have them, because that's been very valuable for me as I like get to know some people and reach out to different players in the organization. But my God, like Mitch Haniger, who is a favorite of John's, tweeted this. What was it, John?
It was he's from either Richmond, California, or nearby Richmond, which is just, it's in the Bay Area, and it was a little video about rebuilding and renovating this park in sort of a underserved neighborhood,
awesome.
Where, yeah, it was this wonderful thing, sort of this, an organization that goes around and does this, had come in and done this, and they'd interviewed people from the neighborhood and, government officials, and just about the impact of having a safe space for kids to be outside in their own neighborhoods. Just wonderful, you know, universally supportable thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Haniger tweeted this out, and this great community building thing. And, of course, like, the first reply was a guy saying, love you, but what, and I mean what, does this have to do with your rehab? Which I couldn't help but read in, like, a Foghorn Leghorn voice.
I said, boy, where are your tea bounds?
Oh, man. People.
Yeah.
People. So one player that for the Rangers that I think got off of social media this year and it apparently has helped him a lot is Joey Gallo. He used to be on a fair amount, and he would, like, block people that said mean things about him, which I don't blame him at all. But, like, if somebody wrote an article about him that suggested that maybe he wasn't as good as advertised, he would just block them.
The Stefan Romero treatment.
Yes.
Which, you know, hey, if you're an athlete, live your life, do what you got to do. But I think it's been really good for him to get off of it and sort of just learn, give himself the space to fail, which you have to be able to do in baseball. And, and yeah, I wouldn't have an account if I was a professional athlete. I think I would go the Michael Young route, who he didn't have an account when he was a player, but now that he's retired and, you know, well loved by everybody, he has started an account and he's actually fantastic at Twitter, and he's very, like, he's kind of snarky but in a lovable way, and, like, it's great. That's the way to do it. Like, retire first, and then when people tweet at you, retire, you'd be like, did it already.
Does he generally talk about baseball? Michael Young was another one of those admired but despised players for me, who I think he hit about 680 against the Mariners, if I remember correctly.
And yeah. Those were the good old days. Well, he does. He engages on baseball stuff, but also just on, like, you know, real life stuff too.
Yeah, that's fun.
I think it's definitely a thing with younger players where, because they're part of the social media generation and they're used to having social media, like, they have Instagrams and they have Twitters. Mm-hmm. I think they more have Instagrams than they have Twitters, but they all interact with their friends that way. Yeah, seriously. And it's easier to hide your identity on Snapchat, I think. Like, mm-hmm. You have to know what the person's name, what their handle is to find them on Snapchat, generally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you type in, like, you know, a guy with sort of a common name. Even I think Joey Gallo is probably a pretty common name, right? So you just type that in and it won't return you any results.
Oh, so you have to know, you got to know the handle. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
yeah, like, yeah. I'm curious, since, like, we talked about sort of the way that you have approached sort of presenting this, you know, the Rangers and trying to get at not just, I think, the baseball and the sort of cliched answers. If you've seen sort of a response in that of people who have come out and said, you know, been more engaged with the team as a result, like, because you've been able to portray players in a multidimensional way, have you gotten positive feedback on that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's a really that's an interesting and good question that I don't really know if I have an answer for. I feel like a lot of the people that I talk to were already pretty engaged.
Sure.
And so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, I see obviously my numbers go up, and I see the station. You know, we've increased our numbers, and people have engaged with us more. But I think those are people that were already prone to engaging with the team.
Sure.
I don't know that I really have a whole lot to do with it, other than for people who want to engage with the team that way, I give them maybe another option or a way to do that.
And so part of that, I guess, I'm curious about, because the Mariners fans, and Kate, you can certainly speak to this, I think the average Mariner fan mentality is one of every spring is a new spring, and every spring is a new chance for the Mariners to be exciting and fail.
Yeah.
And the sort of people are, you know, obviously there's exceptions, but I think as a collective, there's sort of an expectation that they're just waiting for the team to collapse, and, oh, same old Mariners.
Yeah.
Is sort of, it's a mantra at this point.
Built-in nihilism.
Exactly. I'm curious if you, how would you describe the sort of stereotypical Rangers fan mindset, I guess?
Oh man, that's tough. Because I think there are some who, who engage it that way. Because the Rangers haven't ever won a World Series, and because they have failed in some really spectacular and unexpected ways in the last 6 years. I think the last time people were really happy as Rangers fans was 2010, because the team had just made their first World Series, right? Mm-hmm. And so we didn't care if they lost. Like, they just made a World Series for the first time ever. How cool. Mm-hmm. And then in 2011, they made it back, and you guys know what happened in 2011 with, you know, Game 6 and all of that mess. And that was just, I think it gave people a little bit of shock. So the next year in 2012, when things kind of collapsed at the end, and they lost in the wild card play-in game to the Orioles, or to the was that the year with the? See, I'm showing that I'm not. It was either the Orioles or the Rays, and then the next year was the Orioles that they lost to on the final day of the season. I think that was it. We had Yu Darvish versus Joe Saunders, and Joe Saunders won. That was in 13, and then in 14, like, everybody got hurt. And the Rangers had like 17 first basemen. I got to play first base for the Rangers that year.
That was neat.
Last 2015, they came back and they were, you know, people got healthy. They made it to the playoffs. They had the best record in the AL. No. That was when they came from behind. That's right. They came from behind and they took over the Astros. They got to wave the big, like, we came and took it flag. And then the series in Toronto happened the way that it did, with three errors in the seventh inning of Game 5. And then last year they had the best record in the AL and just got swept by Toronto. So it's like they've come up with new and inventive ways to be heartbreaking. And so I think there are a lot of Ranger fans that see the team as, like, we love this team, but how is it going to go this year? Like, whose arm is going to fly off in the middle of a pitch? Like, so people deal with that different ways. I think there are optimists that view it as like, it's going to break my heart at some point, but it's still baseball and it's a sport that I love, and I get to, you know, I get to watch this play out. It could be worse. It could be not baseball. And I think I probably count myself in those ranks. And then there are others that are just like, fire the manager, fire the hitting coach, fire the pitching coach, fire everybody and disband the team, and especially fire the general manager and burn the ballpark down because they're never going to win.
Like, well, I mean, kind of doing that anyway, right?
Right, so everybody gets to be happy and happy at the same time.
Yeah, I was looking at Evan Grant's mention. Evan Grant had himself a little sass party today.
He does that.
Which was great. Fully enjoyable. Tell him to follow Lookout Landing back, by the way. He made a big deal over us finally following him and then didn't follow back. Come on.
Really?
But I saw a little bit of that kind of emerge because the Rangers were in danger of surrendering a very large lead today.
Yeah, like they have done on a few occasions this year.
You know, that's sort of the Astros thing, though. They did it to us once. They did it to the Angels. They did it to the A's.
Sean Manaea had that, like, no hitter.
Yeah, he was throwing a no hitter.
It disappeared.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that's kind of the Astros thing, and I felt bad that the poor old Rangers were getting tagged by that when it's clearly some kind of evil devil magic.
You didn't feel bad.
I was going to say, Kate.
I appreciate you being kind on my behalf, but you didn't feel bad.
I felt a little bit bad because, you know, it was going to make you possibly late if they tied it up and went to extras. No, I wanted a cheery, cheery Levi, obviously, even though I recognize that.
Regardless.
That often, it's frustrating being friendly with people in the division because I know that every happiness afforded to us costs you a little something and vice versa.
Yeah, so. But, you know, I think the Rangers and the Mariners were so, there was a time when they were pretty, like, staunch enemies. I think back in the, like, Dave Valley charging the mound in the late 80s days.
Oh.
But it feels like there's some simpatico a little bit between the two lately. Like, the Mariners are like the least hated team by Rangers fans. We hate the Astros the most, and like the Angels the second most, and the A's, just because they've inexplicably beaten the Rangers a few times when they were supposed to be bad lately. It's just this sort of like, ugh, they're not supposed to be good, ugh. The Mariners, I don't know, it's just sort of this like, yeah, if we're not going to win, maybe the Mariners can win.
I think a lot of people would like to see the Mariners win, including Mariners fans.
Yeah. some Mariners fans, not all Mariners
yeah,
fans.
No, it's
do you think that that's the case with Mariners fans? Like, it was kind of the thing with Cubs fans for a long time, that they were the lovable losers, right? So I was interested to see, you know, if some people would kind of give up a little bit now that they won their World Series. Like, that's it. I can walk away happy and be done. And obviously they would be replaced by bandwagon fans, but I wonder if that would be the case with Mariners fans too, because so much of the identity of the team the last few years has been like this, like nihilism, that I wonder if winning a World Series would just totally wreck their reputation. It'd be like the indie band that finally got like a gold record and all their fans are like, ugh, sold out.
It's possible. I think the thing that keeps that back is that a significant part of that sort of genre of Mariners fandom is also engaged with being either diametrically opposed to being a Seahawks fan.
Yes.
Because you don't want to be a 12.
Okay.
Or hangs around purely so that they can point out how much better the Seahawks or the Sounders are as organizations. And so I think there, you know, there's a chance that some might drop off, but I think it would more just be, it would allow those people the first ammunition they have ever had in a long time to say, ha, we did something better than the Seahawks, which, you know, they're both fun teams. Yeah. I don't know if there's a need to compare, but Jesus, sorry. I keep seeing sweeping lightning. I don't know if you swiped it back at me, Kate, or what's going on.
Yeah,
but
no,
I'm like
sorry.
This
is the
longest lightning storm I have seen in in Seattle.
I just got
time.
Totally distracted because it is now just biblical raining outside, and I had that moment that you always have. You know, we live in the rain, so we're used to it. But like, I just had that terrifying feeling that you have sometimes, like, oh my God, I left a window open somewhere. Right. You know, like, it's that kind of rain. It's just passing overhead. Woof. All right. So moving on. Also, I don't want to go down Mariners fan nihilism too much longer, because that is sucky. Did we cover Joey Gallo enough, do you think?
Oh, I mean, it seems like he has been, you know, with Beltre out, would you say he's been sort of the biggest bright spot so far?
Yeah. I mean, I voted for him for Rangers Player of the Month, and he won Rangers Player of the Month for April. He's what I told everybody that asked coming into the season, because he struggled. His batting average was under 100 in the big leagues last year, and he struggled in the last half of 2015 too. Mm-hmm. And everyone, you know, what's it going to take for Joey Gallo to succeed this year? And my standard answer was that he needs to learn how to fail, because he's always been kind of the best player on his team, and I can hear the rain, by the way. It's very loud.
Is that the rain, Kate? I thought you were just sort of slowly drifting towards like a wood chipper or something.
But
Lord,
sorry, I was going for the mute button there.
I started it, but yeah, I mean, talking to him this year, it's not like I took him aside and went, "Hey, Joey, as a member of the media, allow me to tell you, you need to learn how to fail." But I've been watching for signs for that, and there have been a couple of times this year where he said, you know, our hitting coach took me aside and just said, you know, stop trying to be a 300 hitter. Stop worrying about it when you strike out. Here's what you do. You hit a lot of home runs. You hit the ball really, really hard, and you strike out a lot. Be the best version of that you can be. And don't let the strikeouts bother you, because you're still going to produce enough, not just with your glove, but he's also a really good defensive third baseman. He's fast. He's a smart base runner. He can contribute in other ways than just hitting home runs. And it's like he gave himself permission to be himself, and all of a sudden he can strike out three times in a game, and he goes up there in late innings and he doesn't look defeated. He's not slumping. He's not dragging the bat back to the dugout. He's like, all right, maybe this time, but if I don't, then the time after that. Like, and that's just what it takes in baseball. You have to be able to fail and forget about it quickly and prepare for the next one. And he's really done that well this season.
So I know I keep extending us because I apologize, but you what you're saying keeps bringing up interesting questions. You had talked, I think, about how Carlos Gomez had also had a really good sort of come to God moment in terms of how he was hitting.
Yeah.
Is the hitting coaching, is there one guy or that has been sort of soothsaying for Rangers hitters?
Yeah,
or
it's Justin Mayshore, I think, is the guy that I both Gallo and Gomez talked about. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I talked to people who work a lot in the minor leagues or cover the minor leagues, and they said that when he was in the minor leagues, there were a lot of the younger guys that were not buying into what he was saying, and that he struggled almost to keep a job in the minor leagues. But then he gets up to the big league club, and he's all of a sudden the bat whisperer. So I don't know. I don't know if he made an adjustment or what. But yeah, both Gomez and Gallo have credited him with their turnarounds.
That is frustrating to hear as Mariners fans, but fascinating to hear as a baseball fan.
Well, but it you is. Guys had your own, like when Leonis Martin left, and there were interviews last year where he said, I would have never made this adjustment and gotten better if I had stayed in Texas where I was. Like, it required coming here and working with Edgar Martinez. Mm-hmm. So, I think it's just different players with different coaches. Like, sometimes it clicks and sometimes it doesn't.
I mean, Leonis Martin, maybe not the greatest example to throw out right now.
Not this season, maybe.
He's undergoing.
Well, he went on his own little journey of I should move my hands again, and perhaps Edgar knew what he was talking about the first time.
And you know, I mean, I think it's been good for him to kind of get to. It's so much about attitude, like you were talking about, and it really seemed to have damaged his attitude to struggle so much. So now he's with the Rainiers. He's with a team that's pretty young. They're very fun. They're winning a lot. He's kind of, you know, the boss of the outfield again, as opposed to because he's in an outfield with Tyler O'Neill, who is not a particularly strong outfielder. I mean, he's good, but he's not Leonis Martin good.
Right.
And Zach Schenk, who is not an outfielder. I don't know why they have Zach Schenk out there, except they're trying to turn him into a super utility player.
Everyone will be Taylor Motter.
Yeah, exactly. So
I will pretend to have heard the name Zach Schenk before.
Oh, no, he's not he's not a name you probably would have heard. He's like a Swiss Army knife player.
He's our fifth 5'10" white guy. Middle infielders come utility player.
Gotcha. Yeah. We just got another one of those. Pete Cosma just signed with the Rangers.
There you go.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Can we talk briefly about Jurickson and Profar and what the heck?
Yeah,
if I was Jurickson and Profar being designated for Pete Cosma, I would be real mad.
Well, yeah, but he's going to get to play shortstop every day. And that's what he wants. And he wasn't going to do that here for as long as Elvis was around. And, you know, at the end of maybe 2014, first part of 2015, there was a lot of talk that when Profar got healthy, then he would be the shortstop here in Texas. But all of a sudden, Elvis Andrus has undergone some renaissance. And so he's always had the build to be a guy that hits 15 home runs a year. But I heard an interesting theory a couple of weeks ago that maybe when Ron Washington was in Texas, that he saw something in Elvis that reminded him of himself. And so he tried to craft Elvis Andrus in his own form and turn him into this sort of slap singles, you know, high defense, low offense, bunt heavy infielder. And when Jeff Banister came to town and it was a new mindset, all of a sudden Elvis, who is, I mean, he's got the build to be a really good shortstop that hits the ball really hard and drives in runs, and now he's hitting cleanup today in the Rangers lineup. And he's got 5 home runs already. And
yeah.
And so I think that renaissance has been amazing. And so, yeah, Jurickson Profar is kind of a guy without a position. Rougned Odor jumped him in the standings at second base when he was injured. And you know, third base, it's Beltre, then Gallo. And Profar can kind of play some first base, but it's only because he tried last year. He'd never played first base at any position or at any level before last year. And after 2 days of practice, like, well, you're the starting first baseman today. I mean, he's not a first baseman. So after that, you're looking at left field or a super utility position, and he just has not thrived doing that. He's been bad at the plate this year, and he kind of looks like he's checked out a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, send him to AAA and let him build up his trade value again. Because he used to be the number one prospect in all of baseball. I think right now you would struggle to get a whole lot from him.
Yeah.
Even as a trade piece. So let him build that up back up in AAA and let him, you know, set him free.
And probably flip him for some pitching at some point. Do you think that that's the likely route?
That seems like the likely route, but then you got to look at, well, are the Rangers going to compete this year? If they're not, then maybe you, I don't know how you trade him if you're not a contender. Because if you're a contender, then yeah, you trade him for a bullpen, you know, quality bullpen arm or a starter, but, you know, by then Hamels is going to be ideally healthy, and so will Tyson Ross, and so your rotations are going to be pretty set. But if you're not a contender, then you're a seller, and I don't know how you get rid of Jerks and Profar as a seller right now. You're not going to send him to a contender. They're not going to – I don't think a contender brings on a Jerks and Profar this year unless he's just setting the world on fire. You're not going to really sell – trade him to another seller probably. I mean, maybe that's the route. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I don't have any good theories as to how that's going to go.
It'll be interesting to see. And I know there was a piece today, I think, by Dave Cameron talking about if Yu Darvish would be someone that the Rangers would sell, sort of like Zach Greinke, I think, was a few years ago, if they continued to struggle. Which, I mean, I'm sure right now they would not at all do that. And I don't want to ask, but are they going to do that as someone who lived through a decade of,
I think it's,
are you
going to
trade Felix now? Are you going to trade Felix now? And it's like, no.
Right. But Felix and the Mariners have always had, as far as I know, and correct me if I'm wrong, they've always had a pretty good relationship between him and the organization and between him and the fans.
Definitely.
I don't think that's been the case with Darvish. You know, you get people that are adamant that he is not an ace and that he cares. You get people in the local media that he cares too much about striking people out, not about winning baseball games. I'm like, well, one good way to win baseball games is to strike
people out.
And there may be some legs to this theory, that because I asked him about it and he said he admitted that it's true that he pitches differently with a lead than he does when the game is tied or is behind. And as a result, he hasn't been as good with a lead as he has been at other times. So there's some legitimate frustration to be had there in that specific thing, but my goodness, if you want to make a deep run into the playoffs, yes, you want Yu Darvish on your team. You want the guy with the, you know, 11 strikeouts per nine in his career. You want that guy at the top of your rotation. So, yeah, I think if they struggle, I do think he will be moved. And, man, if it comes to that, give me all the prospects, like all of them.
Yeah, is the Texas farm with the I mean, I know that Profar, I guess, is sort of still a prospect, and Gallo's just recently up. Are there other big names or anything to be excited about there?
Well, you got Ronald Guzman, who was a first baseman, and he used to be this, you know, he's about 6'6", and he used to be built about like me, which doesn't mean much if you don't know me. so let's come up with a better one. A lamp or possibly a broom.
Now, hang on. Would it be a broom standing with the handle on the bottom, or?
Let's make the swishy part on top. That can be the hair.
The hair.
Okay, excellent.
So, but he's gained, you know, 40 pounds in the last year, and all of a sudden he's hitting authority. And so I think he is absolutely going to be the first baseman of the future. But no, I do think a lot of the Rangers' prospects are now, you know, Nomar Mazara, who is a starting outfielder, and Joey Gallo, who's now the starting third baseman, and Rougned Odor, and you got some really young guys that are, you know, Ryan Rua is still young. So right now the farm is kind of Ronald Guzman, and Yohander Mendez is a left-handed starter.
That was the other guy.
Who could be something. Connor Sadzek throws 100 miles an hour and has been really impressive, but he's still in Double A. And And then Jose Trevino is a catcher who is probably still two years away, I would think. So no, I mean, it could be a healthy thing for the organization to sell off this year and restock that for a nice long run in the future with these guys that are already at the big league level, you know, joined with, I mean, you name it. I'm really bad at playing the game of, I struggle to keep up with my own organization, much less the prospects of others, but, it could be healthy, but also it would be sad. Like, it would be sad to see Yu Darvish go, and it would be sad to see, you know, Jonathan Lucroy, and then your one more year of, you know, does Beltre get traded? And if so, that means he doesn't get a ring with the Rangers. And, you know, there are other guys that are nearing the end of their, let's see, who else is going to be a free agent? Let me go around the horn. I mean, maybe you do trade Andrewson Profar as your shortstop if you believe that if he shows you something in AAA this year. Napoli's gone after this year. Maybe he gets traded, but he probably wouldn't net you much right now. So, yeah, I mean, it could be a total teardown. Tony Barnett could be gone. He's, I think, a free agent after this year. Andrew Kashner, probably. Tyson Ross, if he gets healthy, sure, trade him too.
Would there be rioting if Adrian Beltre did not go into the Hall of Fame as a Ranger?
No, I don't. I think that we only riot about football here.
Okay, because he's sort of one of those fascinating cases where it's, I mean, like, we loved him as a Mariner and he was a good player, mm-hmm. but like, there's no real case there. You know, the
right.
team
his
wasn't
his
good
best years have been in Texas, I think.
Yes, but. I guess he's sort of one of those difficult to place guys who's beloved nationally, mm-hmm. And I'm curious how. I mean, I'm sure he is loved there as well, but does he have sort of that passionate base of?
Oh yeah,
we gotta get him. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it was like he's not quite to the level of, say, Dirk Nowitzki, who has spent his entire career with the Mavericks,
sure.
and you know, getting Nowitzki a ring was a big deal until he got his. I think everybody wanted to get Tony Romo a ring for the Cowboys, mm-hmm. and I think Michael Young was that guy here, mm-hmm. because he had spent, up until he was traded away, his whole career here, and he was so close, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I think as far as like right now, Beltre is that guy that the entire Metroplex, and I think even people around baseball, like, well, even if I hate the Rangers, if they won a World Series and it meant Adrian Beltre got a ring, then okay. So yeah, he's a pretty well loved guy here and elsewhere.
Sure. So we have one final question.
Okay.
Far more important, I guess, than anything that we've discussed so far.
This
comes from our fellow Lookout Landing staff writer, Isabel Manassian at 95 Coffee Spoons. And the question, I guess, two-part question is, what cupcake best represents Jerry DePoto? And if Jeff Bannister were an olive, what kind of olive would he be?
Okay. I think DePoto he starts with a chocolate cupcake, but then he trades it for a vanilla one with sprinkles. And he takes that and flips it for two donuts and a bear claw. Eats the bear claw, trades the two donuts off for one of those rainbow-colored cupcakes that is it's home, like a locally sourced rainbow cupcake.
Sure.
And he started with a chocolate cupcake and ended up with a locally sourced rainbow cupcake. But what happened is the rainbow cupcake rotted unexpectedly, and it was not nearly as good as everybody expected it to be.
Oh.
The rainbow cupcake is Drew Smiley.
Based on his Twitter, perhaps not.
But... Oh, that was that was a political joke.
I don't know enough to catch this joke, but did Drew Smiley say something insensitive about?
Not insensitive.
No, but Drew Smiley's politics can probably not be described as rainbow.
Oh, right. Yeah. I think that's a lot of baseball players.
It is, except it's not Mitch Haniger, a.k.a. Seattle folk hero.
Yeah, guy trying to make the world better. Sean Doolittle is like my favorite non-Rangers player.
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
Yeah, he's on the DL again, which is, again, the 2017 season is not. I mean, maybe that'll give him more time for tweeting and doing stuff in the world, but.
Yeah. As to what kind of olive Jeff Bannister would be, let's go Kalamata because they're super salty.
And also kind of shrivelly.
Oh, well, see, I think we've finally figured out a way to be enemies again. We can start talking trash about each other's teams. Here we go. It wasn't going to be the players. It had to be the managers in the front office. We found it.
I will say, both of our teams do have, bipedal turtles as coaches, I think, is something we should be bonding over and not fighting.
Yeah. There you go. Way to build that bridge back, John.
I sit in the office every day for home games with Jeff Bannister, and I learn a lot from him. But I do think he is somebody who kind of thrives on conflict. And I think his history will tell you that. Like, being told that he was never going to walk again was like his motivation for coming back and playing baseball. And he made it to the big leagues and like got one at bat. And his one at bat, he beat out an infield single by like sheer force of will. And he's the first manager that I've ever known that like just goes out and he also wants to rumble when the bench is clear. Like, he will lead. He's leading the charge. I think he just like thrives on conflict, and I don't. And that's it's been interesting to sit and listen to him speak, you know, every day for 20 minutes, and just think like we are opposite people, but I am still learning, you know. So that's been fun for me, and I wonder how it would be to sit, because obviously, you know, first team to cover. I wonder how it would be sitting under different managers, if it would be better or worse, or what it would be like.
Yeah,
I make it sound like we don't get along. Like we do. We totally get along. We're just, you know, we're friendly opposite people. I don't know.
Sometimes you learn the most from your opposite person, right? Like, oh, that is not at all the way that I approach the world, but knowing that that's how you do expands my worldview and gives me new things to think about, even though I would never, ever, ever, like, you know, willingly run onto a baseball field where players were about to brawl. Like, that's just not...
Right. I would be... So last year, AJ Griffin is not my opposite people. AJ Griffin, he's my people. Last year he got fined because when the Rangers and the Blue Jays had their big fight with the Odor Bautista thing, he was on the disabled list. And so this fight is sort of winding down and everyone's still really super heated, and he's just like expressionlessly walking around picking up hats off of the field. He's got like 20 hats. He's just like collecting these hats on the field, just aimlessly walking around looking for hats, picking them up. And it was the best part. And he got fined for being on the field because he was on the disabled list. He was not allowed to go out there. He's like, I wasn't doing anything. I was just trying to clean up.
I was just trying to clean up. yes, the Levi Weaver story.
Like that's if I were out there, I don't know, maybe I would get heated and like spear tackle somebody like Sam Dyson did, but no, I kind of think I'd be the guy like just aimlessly wandering up picking up hats.
That would definitely, I think, definitely be my role if I was out there at all, or maybe standing off to the side saying, guys, hey, guys,
this is getting ugly.
Yeah, that I think that's really where I would shine the brightest.
Yeah.
Just another lack of representation for me in baseball, that there's no person out there saying, guys.
Your own team would peg you with a pitch somehow. like, not only did you not retaliate on our behalf, you tried to get us to stop. Your pitcher would turn to, like, pick off a runner at first base and instead just wing it into the dugout right at you. That's what would happen.
Oh, well, we really appreciate you spending the time with us today, Levi.
Thanks, yeah, my pleasure.
Tell people where to find you and your work, because even as a non-Rangers fan, I often find myself reading it just because the quality of the writing is so high.
If you want to see a bunch of pointless tweets, like I tweet a lot during the season, and that's at 32EFIS, but you have to spell out, there's no numbers, it's T-H-R-E-E-T-W-O. EPHUS, E-E-P-H-U-S. And then if you just want to read the articles, my Facebook page is probably the best place for that, which is, it's the same, like facebook.com/32EPHUS. And then we've got the Baseball Texas app if you want to get my boring notifications in the middle of Ranger games.
Will we get pictures?
The bison? Yeah, the bison? Exactly. Are those the Sam Bison ones?
No,
or
no, those are
more rote.
Those are the Dr. Morneau. check and see which Twitter account this. Yeah, so on Twitter it's Dr. Morneau. Doctor is all spelled out.
Perfect.
I've got my 300 followers there, so very, very successful.
Well, I mean, after you get the LL boost, don't be surprised to see that go up to like 304, you know, 305.
You know what happened? I was at 240 like yesterday, and then Emma Span suggested, you know what the world needs is, or you know what MLB needs to stay relatable is an account that like Dr. Moreau style meshes together animals and baseball players, and like all of my followers went, well, actually, this exists. So I got the Emma Span bump yesterday.
Nice. Excellent. All right. Well, we really appreciate you spending the time with us, Levi.
Always fun. Yep.
And thank you to the listeners so much for listening to us ramble on about storytelling and rodeo church, and
yes.
I'm still having trouble saying those two words together because it's just not something I've ever thought about, but I'm gonna go think about it.
Not that common in Seattle, but my brother actually lives in the Pacific Northwest. He lives in Bend and pastors a cowboy church in Bend as well, so that's the family business that I have
turned your back on.
The black sheep of the rodeo, of the cowboy church.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what went wrong.
Oh, there's your biography. The black sheep of the cowboy church.
The black mutton busting sheep of the. Do you guys know what mutton busting is?
No.
No.
It's where they put children on sheep and turn them loose. They do this.
Is that like a punishment?
No. It's a competition, and they do this at like very rural rodeos, and they're like, so you get on the sheep as a small child. I think I was like 7 and my brother was like 5 or maybe 6 and 4, and you like hunker down on the sheep and you grab the wool, and then they open the chute and they let this sheep out, and sheep are much more agile than bulls. They're like super fast, and they like bounce around and do Barry Sanders cuts on the dirt, and they will just like face plant these children on the ground, and everybody laughs and guffaws, and it's a great time, and these children get up and they're out of breath and crying, and everyone's just knee slapping like, this is the greatest thing ever. My brother started to slide, like he fell under the sheep and the sheep stepped on his nose when he was like 4, and everyone was laughing so hard that they couldn't hear what he was saying, and they were like, Dodes, what are you talking about, Dodes? And he's like takes his hand and his nose is bleeding. He's like, the sheep stepped on my nose.
And that was the moment that he decided he wanted to make this his career.
Right,
right?
Right. I'm in. I've invested in blood now, so I guess I'm in.
That sounds like it's no fun for the child nor the sheep.
No, it's no fun for anybody but the ruthless adults who planned it. But the kids win things, and so they're like happy to win, I guess. And I don't know, man. Little cowboy kids are tough. They really are, and I will give them credit for that. Like, they'll stand up and they'll ride again, even though they cried the last time. They're like, I'm tougher than that sheep, and they'll get another one. Like, you know what? You know what, kid? You're tougher than me too. Like, congratulations to you.
Well, I think we just learned something really important about the character of many Texans, and I will think twice before I mess with any Texans again.
Yeah, it's true. I think I think the last time I did it though, I was in Idaho, so like it's not just Texas, but yeah, it's. It very much informs, I think, the culture of a lot of rural America.
Well, I highly encourage anyone who's listening to the podcast who has firsthand experience / video of this to tweet it to the Lookout Landing account, because I am still like only 75% believing that this is a real thing. It just seems like
Google it.
It just seems like that should not be allowed.
Mutton, M-U-T-T-O-N, like, you know, like lamb, bustin', and don't put the G on the end of it, because it's not mutton busting, it's mutton bustin'.
Mutton bustin', of course. So,
depending on how much, like, where the closest one is, LL May by August, and depending on the Mariners' production, LL May become a mutton bustin'.
It's got to be out by Spokane. Like, I know there are rodeos. Yeah, in Spokane.
I've been to a rodeo, the OMAC Stampede. Like, that's 4 hours from here. Like, I can get there. Not too far.
There's a big rodeo in Walla Walla, Washington, but I think that one's too big. Like, it has to be a little like county rodeo for this.
For mutton busting.
Little off brand, little off the side of the road.
Right. This is not for major league rodeo. It's for like your A-ball of rodeo.
Okay. The Modesto Nuts rodeo.
There you go. We somehow found a way. It took us a while, but we did. We connected the Modesto Nuts and mutton busting. I knew we were going to get there.
Why was that not the initial mascot? The alliteration's there.
Oh, no.
Modesto Nuts mutton busting is not a search term that I'm going to put into Google. Mm-hmm. That does not sound like it'll return great results. Oh my god, the rain. Can you hear it?
Yes, it sounds like static. I think we need to wrap up before you get washed away into the Puget Sound.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
Alright, well, you guys... I was gonna end it with best of luck to you, but the Rangers and Mariners are about to play each other. So worst of luck to you for this next 3 days, and best of luck after that.
Yes, yeah, exactly the same.
Same dude.
I still want the Rangers and Mariners both to make the playoffs and somehow meet in the ALCS. That's my hope.
Oh, okay. I mean,
it's not going to happen.
You know, I mean, a lot of surprising things have happened this year, so I suppose.
I'm allowed to hope for all sorts of things.
Yeah. What else do we have?
Against it yet.
If not that.
Right.
All right. Well, I'm going to go make sure that my basement isn't flooded up with water.
Okay.
And thank you again so much for stopping by and chatting with us.
My pleasure. Thank you guys for having me.
All right. We will catch you guys next time.
Mind, soul, never mind on what you care it out for, what you care it out for. We die alone, well on die young. What you care it out for, what you care it out for.